Support for Strange Fruit comes from Caperton Realty, a locally owned and operated real estate company committed to helping clients find their ideal home in Louisville and surrounding areas. Families and homes, each designed differently. Realtors and listings at CapertonRealty.com.
Hi, I'm Kyla.
And this is Jay.
And you're listening to Strange Fruit by WFPL.
Welcome back to listeners. Once the show airs, I'll tell you what, it will be into March. It will be the end of Black History Month. But as we record, we're in the final days, the final hours of Black History Month. And for me, at least, Doc, I don't know about you, it has been a wonderful Black History Month.
It has.
Yeah, you know, black people have been winning. Janelle Monáe got some new music videos out.
Mm-hmm.
Black Panther, you know, came out. The trailers for A Wrinkle in Time. It's just been a cool February, and so I'm really happy about that. As I often do, you know, I peruse the internet, come across think pieces that really catch my eye, and you and I have talked significantly over the past couple of months with some guests about the ways in which black people in particular, but people of color in general, are dealing with stigmas and misconceptions and microaggressions when it comes to like kind of navigating dating life,
mm-hmm.
navigating gay life. You and I have talked about experiences that we have when we go to gay spaces and we're either misread as straight or people will misread you as some kind of snap diva as opposed to you know, a highly educated professor. And
yeah,
just like, what is it like navigating capital G-A-Y life as a person of color? And so I came across a piece called The Gay Community's Fear and Loathing of Asian Men Must End. And so I thought it'd be really cool to invite to the show actor Lee Dowd, who wrote that thing piece, to talk about what it's like from an Asian perspective navigating the same issues we've talked about. So we began by asking Lee to talk about his article and what he sought to highlight by raising these points. So let's take a listen to that.
These issues that arise in dating culture, whether it's on Tinder, on Grindr, even in just in everyday life, these stigmas, they exist.
Yeah.
And it doesn't matter how progressive we think we are in 2018, there's still marginalization of people of color. And it's happening within this already marginalized community. you know, when I set out to write the piece, I had been asked because of the show that I'm on called I'm Fine, we had done a scene where my character goes on a date with someone who is less than open-minded. And the date itself that we portrayed in the show is actually based on some real-life experiences that I had had. And so when we were doing press for our second season, The Advocate actually asked me to write an op-ed about my experiences as a mixed-race Asian-American actor in Hollywood and in the gay community here in L.A. Sorry, I totally just went off on a tangent.
No, that's cool. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, one, I'm really interested to see that episode, and I really liked your piece because me and Jay have talked about especially we've really talked about these dating profiles, these apps that gay men frequent, yeah. like Grindr, Tinder.
Don't look at me like I know all the.
I mean, again,
Grindr, Tinder, Jacked, Scruff.
Yes, right. And how folks will say the first thing you see on folks' dating profiles is no blacks, no Asians,
whites only.
And, you know, or this is just my dating preference. How do you feel when you see messages like that, when you're trying to find someone to date or have dinner with, and as soon as you hit their profile, it says no blacks, no Asians?
I mean, I think everybody tries to preface that by saying, oh, they're not being racist. That's just their dating or sexual preference. But I want people to understand that that actually is racism. That's something that has been ingrained in our culture. And that it stems further back than just, you know, attraction. Because then you start having to question why you have that attraction or lack of. Because I think by saying no blacks, no Asians, you're saying that if it came down to the last two men on Earth and you had to choose one of them to spend the rest of your time with, that you could feasibly eliminate one of those people based on skin color.
Yeah.
That's racism.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Plain and simple, that is racism. And it's not to say that we aren't allowed to have types. I think we all have types. Our types come from a lot of the exposure that we've had in our formative years, in our years where we were developing a sense of identity for, you know, whether you're talking sexual or whatever. But, you know, in my article, I talk about media representation and underrepresentation of minority groups, whether it's Black or Asian or Latino, I think have led to this either stigma, especially within the gay community, and also fetishization.
Absolutely.
And on the, that would be on the flip side of it. Yeah. It's fascinating to me, and I, you know, I try not to read comments on articles like that, because I think a lot of the people who feel the need to express negative views on those comment boards, whether it's Facebook or whatever, a lot of them haven't even read the article, or they've missed the point entirely.
Yeah.
But what I did find interesting was people who got very defensive about feeling like their preferences were being attacked. And I think then those people need to kind of take a long look in the mirror and kind of see what is it that made them so defensive about that.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
You know, yeah. Is there something that is ingrained in them that's subconscious, that's dormant? I mean, I had some people write things like, well, because I'm not into women, does that make me a sexist or a misogynist? And the answer is no, it doesn't. You know, being gay is biological. But you're not born racist.
Yeah.
Nobody is born. You're born a blank slate. You're not born with any preconceived notions about somebody else's skin color. That is society. That's a societal construct. So I think that was, you know, my point in writing the article was not to call people out or point fingers, but to simply raise awareness to, I think, an issue that's been going on for a lot longer than most people want to recognize.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I think you're so right, and I love that you point out that you have two sides of the coin, if you will. You have the desexualization of Asian men, but then you have the hypersexualization or the exoticism of, and especially like if we think about porn culture, like primarily when it comes to like Asian women, you know, they become this trope of eroticism and the Asian maid who barely speaks any English, like that's a real erotic type. But when it comes to Asian men, whether they be straight or gay, that they really are very rarely the leading man. And so you mentioned, especially for people like us who grew up in the 90s, there were very few Asian or Asian American actors, models, singers that were like sex symbols, right? You had Jackie Chan, you had Jet Li, but they are more of the martial artists. They were more of the action hero, much more so than a romantic lead. And even, Doc, if you remember, like Romeo Must Die with Aaliyah and Jet Li, there was some kind of like romantic this or that, but it really wasn't played upon. And so there has been, I think that was just that mainstream sitcom recently that had the Asian American dude as a lead. It was like on ABC or something, right? But before that, you really had not seen Asian men, and they've usually been the comic relief, right?
Mm-hmm.
Plus, like Black people used to be, you know, comic relief, yeah, or the sidekick or the nerd, and so you're right.
And they're often presented in a very asexual,
absolutely,
friend buddy,
yes,
way. So
yeah.
I mean, representation does matter when it comes to formulating the humanity around people that are different than
and
yourself.
And even our own, like, it's okay. Like, instead of being offended, let me take this chance to kind of reevaluate my own ideas about how I began to see this person or that person as erotic or romantic. And I think about, Doc, you know, when I was coming up in Louisville as a young Black kid who was kind of nerdy and talked white and didn't really know any other Black gay people. Mm-hmm. Initially, for me as a young adult, and you know, I liked white dudes, right? Or at least I thought I did. I thought that's all I liked. That's all who seemed to like me, right?
Mm-hmm.
And it's not until I moved to D.C. at 19 years old and discover a city, Chocolate City, as it is, that has a wide variety of Blackness, right? Many representation of performances of Blackness. And even my own Black nerdy tale fit right in, and somebody found me attractive, right? So so for me, who would have said, like, you know, I'm not into Black guys. It's just not, you know, that wasn't the truth. It's just that what affirmed me, or what I saw as valuable, what I saw as attractive, what I saw as popular, wasn't Black people in Louisville, right? And so it wasn't until I began to go to a different environment that I recognized that really was just simply the something that I had just been essentially taught. And I think maybe that's what you kind of bring up, Lee, that really it's about, like, you know, we get these images and we get these ideas from the things that go on around us. Is that right, Doc?
Yeah, no, I mean, I completely agree. And Lee, I was wanting to ask you, you know, me and Jay have had kind of, you know, off the air conversations around this idea. And one of the things that Jay said that I thought was really, really poignant around this dating app and no blacks, no fats, no femmes, no Asians, was that it's not about someone really going through their entire life and not finding a black man attractive, not finding an Asian man attractive. I mean, certainly they have, but dating is also a political thing in the sense of who do you want to introduce to your family? How is your family going to react to this partner, right? So, I mean, for me, I honestly, you know, I agree with Jay in the sense that, and I want to ask you, Lee, do you really think it's about preference or is it about, can I bring this person home to my
cachet,
family?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I definitely think the social aspect of that, it comes into play. I mean, a lot of men and women, I think, as well, who, you know, are, whether they're dating an Asian man or they're into Asian guys, whatever it is, like, they sometimes get dubbed, you know, either a rice queen or, yeah, or whatever derogatory term that people have come up with for that. But it's, people seem to think that, you know, if you, I guess, fall into this trap, that maybe you get labeled on top of that. If you're dating someone of color, whether it's a minority or...
You can kind of get pigeonholed, that if, especially if you're a white dude and you may say you date a black person, or you date, or just say you're open, right, and you date an Asian person or a Latino person, that you're saying, like, maybe you get pegged as kind of being a rice queen, a bean queen, that kind of a thing. Is that something that happens pretty frequently,
yes,
you think?
Yes, that's exactly what I'm trying to say. I think if you're in the majority, if you're white, let's say, and you know, have an Asian boyfriend, people will then dub you a rice queen. Or yeah, if you're, you know, with a black guy, then they'll say, oh, you have jungle fever, whatever it is. There are these labels and these terms that I think make people a little fearful as well. I think it's, you know, the labeling goes both ways. But I think that that stigma is hard for a lot of people to swallow as well.
Yeah.
And then, you know, you notice that in a way, a lot of times when you're out at the bars or whatever, you see that a lot of people really are, for lack of a better term, sticking to their own kind.
Yeah.
And that there isn't really a cross-pollination, I guess, of people. And I think, you know, I talked about this in my article as well, it's perception of race. It's not, I don't think it's the race itself. I think it's, you know, what it means. It's someone's thoughts of what it means.
What you think that race represents? What you think that race represents is all the baggage that comes along with, what do I think that it means to be this or that, right? It's not really about that someone black or brown or Asian has ever offended you. It's like, what is the baggage? What is the loaded stuff that comes along with what I think it means to date somebody of this particular style? And that's why I really enjoyed your piece. Mm-hmm. And you end with this challenge to the readers, to all of us. You say in your piece, Lee, you say, again, I'm not here to convince you that I am enough. I'm here to encourage you to think about where this prejudice stems from. I'm here to encourage you to think before you speak or before you type. I'm here to start an important conversation about sub-marginalization within our already marginalized community. I hope you'll join me in this dialogue. And so I think it's been a really, really brilliant piece, and you have encouraged us to join us in this dialogue. Before we let you go, Lee, I want you to tell our listeners a bit about your projects. In particular, you mentioned the I'm Fine series, which is on, is it Deku? Is that the name of the network?
It is Deku. It's a streaming service for LGBT content. We just released our second season in January. It's about a group of gay men in West Hollywood, gay men of color. We are kind of the on the outskirts, I guess you could say. And we are actually in the works for season three at the moment. We have started talking about the story that we want to tell, continue telling, as our show kind of progresses into its next season. So it's all very exciting. It's all streaming on Deku right now. Seasons 1 and 2 are available. And you can see me in my horrible date.
I love it. I love it. Well, I tell you what, Lee Dowd, author, actor, y'all check him out in the I'm Fine series. You can also see him on past episodes of Californication on Showtime. Lee, thanks so much for being with us, and please take care.
Thanks, Lee.
Thank you, guys.
Bye-bye.
Have a good one.
You too. So, Doc, as I say every week, I'm always on the Facebooks finding cool stuff to read about. And this one really, really piqued my interest because, you know, I've had locks this time around for like 3 years.
Yeah.
I was gone without them for a year. Before that, I had them for 7 years. And even though I loved having locks, they looked glamorous on me. Part of the reason I got locks is because I hate going where?
To the barbershop.
I know.
It makes your anxiety act up.
We've been friends for so long. And, you know, and I told you about, like, even childhood anxiety. Like, I used to even, like, cut my hair at home as a kid because barbershops, for some reason, provided, well, not for some reason, I know exactly why, but they provided a large amount of anxiety for me as a young black gay man child navigating what I perceived at the time to be very, very over, like, very machismo spaces, right, that you know, barbershops were just traumatic for me, child. They just were. And so we saw this really, really cool think piece on the blackyouthproject.com. And so we wanted to invite to the show Deshaun Harrison. Deshaun, what's up?
What's going on, y'all?
How are you?
I am well. I'm here. I'm black. I'm queer. So.
All right. There we go. There we go.
Yes. I mean, your piece was excellent. I mean, we both loved it very much, Deshaun. And just, will you talk to our listeners a little bit about some of the things you say in your piece, particularly around this idea that the black barbershop serves as both a toxic and intimate space for cishet black men? Explain a little bit around how this black barbershop, how it serves as both this place of intimacy and also this place of policing.
Absolutely. So what actually sparked my interest in writing the piece is that for a while on social media, especially, I've seen a lot of black men refer to like going to a separate barber as cheating on the barber. And I thought that like the use of that word specifically was just hilarious to me because oftentimes gay men and queer folks are demonized for daring to be in a romantic or intimate relationship with other men. And so the fact that they would use that word just was hilarious. So I decided to write about it. And so historically in America, the black barbershop has served as a very important space for us. It's been like a place of refuge, which I talk about in the piece as well. It has been a place that a lot of cishet black men, a lot of black folk in general have been able to heal through. We've been able to have conversations about our personal lives and about what's happening in the community and what's happening at our jobs and our workplaces and stuff like that. But it also has been a place that has been really toxic for a lot of folks. Like Jason was just mentioning that a lot of young black, queer, gay men, bisexual men, pansexual men oftentimes do not feel welcome in the barbershop because although it's supposed to be this place of healing, and for some it is, it excludes people like us. And so I decided that I wanted to look more into why that was a thing, especially how they could use words like cheating on their barbers to describe their relationship with them, even jokingly, while also excluding us from this space.
Yeah. Right, exactly. I mean, I saw those same kind of memes and GIFs that were, you know, circulating around social networks, and they were hilarious, you know, like when you cheat on your barber and, you know, then the barber catches them out, but his hair is freshly lined up and cut.
Yeah.
And then he's like scared. Right. I mean, almost as if
there's an episode of Blackish, right? With TV show with Anthony Anderson.
Exactly.
If you ever seen that, you got to watch it. It's on demand. But there's this, you know, I love that show because number one, it breaks down like all the idiosyncratic ways that we're black. But in this particular episode, Dre, which is Anthony Anderson, is teaching his son Junior about, like, you know, the necessity of going to a consistent black barber, right? How the barbershop is a place of refuge and a place of therapy, a place of church, you know. But then, you know, there's this old head that Anthony Anderson's going to for years, right? But his son Junior, right, who's like kind of post-racial, blackish, is like, okay, I'm gonna go to this other dude, right?
Right.
So because Quieter is kept, the old head is like really messed up their hairlines and stuff. He's not good anymore. But the whole episode is based around the idea of cheating on your barber, right? And you know, what can happen, right? The negative things that will happen. Like, the moral of the story is you cheat on your barber, bad things begin to happen to you. And so, you know, it's really funny, Deshaun, I posted your article on my Facebook page without commentary, right? I just posted it like food for thought. Mm-hmm. And some of my straight homeboys who are really, really cool, you know, they're down for the struggle, you know, I think they're allies and accomplices for Black queer people. They were kind of like even a little bit uneasy, if you will, because your article does talk to the homoerotic nature of the barbershop, right? They're like, well, I get the first part about the toxic part, but you know, that the other, and I'm like, dude, you know, and so let's talk a bit, Deshaun, about their own reluctance to even see, even though They use words like cheating, right? That they tell their barber all their sexual business, right? That the barbershops are always talking about who they hit, who they didn't hit, who got what. You know, like, I'm sure there's some barbers talking about Safari's dick pics, you know, right now. You know, like, what about the reluctance of cishet men, right? Even though they participate in these kind of intimate things, I mean, if you dare put your hand on the armrest, you're going to probably touch your barber's gonads at some point, right? So there's all this extra homoerotic stuff happening at barbershops, but nonetheless, cishet men are reluctant to talk about it. What do you make of that, about their own reluctance to talk about the ways in which Black men are intimate with one another?
Mm-hmm. So I always find, like, the pushback to the article hilarious, which I still get, because it's always from cishet men, and it's always about that one word. I use the word homoerotic, I think, maybe twice out of a 1,500-word piece. And that's always the pushback. And so I think that it's hilarious because, it, like you mentioned, if we really talk about, like, what homoeroticism is, and Judith Butler puts it, she says that homoeroticism cannot be separated from the homosociality. Which just means that, like, in a space where men are communing and where they're, like, together, where there's more than two men and they're together, they're talking, they're intimate, that is homoerotic. It may not be this direct, like, sexual like encounter, but it is a homoerotic space. And so I use that word intentionally because I knew that it would be something that would make them uncomfortable, even in the editing process. That was something that we talked a lot about, and they were like, well, are you sure you want to use this word? And I was not budging on moving away from that word because I think that there's something that's very important about homoeroticism, and I think there's something very, very important about naming the interactions between Black men in those spaces as homoerotic. And so I have locks. I've had locks for maybe 7 or 8 years now. But my stepdad's a barber, so before I had locks, he cut my hair all the time. So I'm not new to barbershops. I know what they look like. I know how we interact in those spaces. And because of that is how I even arrived to even thinking about this piece as well, outside of the whole cheating aspect, just because I've seen how they interact in the barbershop. I know that they talk in great detail about their sexual encounters with women and that the barbershop – quiet as kept is a gossip space. People always talk about women as gossiping, but Black men are some of the biggest gossipers I've ever known. And so understanding intimacy as something that goes far outside of sexuality and sexual encounters is really what I was trying to push for in the piece, was for people to recognize, like, hey, the fact that you go and sit in this environment for 10, 15, 20 minutes, and you're talking to other men, some of which are actual strangers, about your sexual encounters, and your barber is cradling your head and is very close, like his body's pressed up against yours, and you're engaging in these random conversations about so many different things that are happening, that's a very intimate thing. And it's also a very homoerotic thing. It is this thing that outside of the barbershop would be understood as gay. Like, these cishet men would absolutely call another man that they saw randomly on the corner who was holding this man's head and pressing his body up against another man gay. Like, that just would be a thing. And so I wanted to kind of get to the point that, like, to essentially say that there's nothing wrong with this. There, in fact, I want us to begin to embrace the fact that the barbershop is a homoerotic space, and that it is a space that that is very intimate. And that way, hopefully, what you're able to do is now be able to include in your conversation and in the environment in general, men who are not cishet and be able to like be more open to intimacy and vulnerability.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And I think, Doc, but I want to ask you too, as you off your comments about, they seem to confuse attraction and intimacy, right? That they seem to, you know, like there are ways that people can be intimate with one another without being attracted, right? And so do you think that that's where straight dudes get caught up? They somehow think the intimacy, when you point out intimacy, you're also suggesting attraction?
I think that we're all socialized to believe that the practice of intimacy or an intimate situation, one is kind of femaline, right? So it's some kind of space that's reserved for femme folks to kind of exhibit intimacy with one another, like good girlfriends, those types of things. And it's not so much available or allowed for young boys or men, particularly young Black boys and Black men, to express notions of intimacy when it comes to friendships or, in this case, the relationship with a barber. And so this is what you point out so brilliantly in your piece. You say the lack of acknowledgement and understanding that the barbershop and the relationship between cishet Black men and their barbers is an intimate one is the very reason that it becomes an antagonistic and almost violent place for Black queer men, right? Because as a Black queer man, there's an acknowledgement of intimacy between two Black men, right?
Yeah,
so the fact that cishet men can acknowledge, yes, the barbershop is an intimate space, and yes, I have an intimate relationship. Intimate does not mean sexual. Intimate does not mean romantic. It means what it means, intimate. Do you see what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Closeness, right?
Yeah.
Closeness.
Vulnerability,
familiarity, a kindredness,
yeah.
Friendship. There's all sorts of things that encompass intimacy, and I think that their lack of acknowledgement to immediately go to this idea that, oh, you mean sexual. And it's like, no. And I'm sorry that you live in a society that only allows you to express intimacy through a sexual realm.
Yeah.
You know, and it's
that part.
Yeah. You know, I mean, I think that this is how even, you know, a lot of feminists want to get cishet men on board with ideas of feminism because misogyny affects them too. It limits their ability to fully express their human abilities.
Uh-huh.
And being intimate with another human being has nothing to do with gender. It has nothing to do with sexuality.
Yeah.
It has to do with a human need of closeness. And the fact that cishet Black men cannot acknowledge, yes, I share intimacy, and it's not sexual intimacy, but it is intimate. And I love that space.
Yeah.
And that's why I don't want to go to no other barber but so-and-so
yeah.
because he does
Absolutely.
It the best.
Yeah.
He does it the best. I mean, because they, you know, they acknowledge all these things. I mean, I see it in my own wife.
Yeah, you were saying
the
Missy.
Missy. You know, she gets real upset if she walks in and her barber is busy with all these other heads. And again, she's masculine of censor and she's not a man, right?
Yeah.
But she has an intimate relationship with her barber as well. And again,
right. The
problem is if I were to say to Missy, well, you and your barber, you know, I'll say, oh, you couldn't go to your barber. You're upset. I ain't upset. I mean, I was in a hurry. You know, she can't even, she can't even wrap her own mind around like, I'm not upset about it. I just really wanted him to do it. Oh, okay.
Yeah.
So it's like,
right.
you know.
Oh, okay, boo. Yeah.
yeah, you know. So that's what I'm saying about the limit. And that is unfortunate. And it's a tragedy. I mean, I just would love to live in a world in which men, right, could express their tenderness and devotion to one another without it being.
I would live in that world too, child. Well, men can just express it through touch.
Yes.
No, I'm teasing.
I mean, you know, for me, I've been able to hold hands with my good girlfriends, give them hugs. I've been able to, you know, kiss them, share intimate space,
tell them
I love them. And I'm telling them I love them in a public way, like writing on Yaba's wall, I love you. You my sister. I love, you know. And y'all aren't allowed to do that without being policed and scrutinized. It's awful.
Right.
You know?
And I think that actually, like, it wasn't until I got to college and, my friend group now is 99.9% Black, queer, trans, non-binary folks. And I identify as a non-binary Black queer person myself. And so it wasn't until I got to college and surrounded myself with like-minded people that I even began to understand intimacy outside of the sexuality myself, right? Like, I have one really good friend. His name's Raekwon Griffin. And he is such a vulnerable, intimate person. And to someone who maybe is not used to it, it becomes like, it's almost like it's this unusual thing, but I love it. I love him for it. Like there's times where, like, he'll just place his hand on my lap, or like he'll randomly hug me, or he'll randomly say that he loves us as friends and stuff like that. And a lot of times people interpret that as something more than what it is, but he's just a very intimate person. And I appreciate him a lot because he pushes me understanding intimacy in a way that is oftentimes not allowed, especially from people who present like me in this very masculine way and from other men like him. And so a lot of the pushback that I get from the piece is cishet men saying things like, oh, y'all, this gay agenda, y'all want to make us gay so bad. And I just find it hilarious every time, because it's like, so you recognize that, like, gay men are intimate people. Yeah. So at least you have some sort of understanding of that. But now I'm wanting to push you to be a person who can be intimate as well, because you're obviously very hostile over something that you don't need to be. And maybe if you were more intimate, like, you would be less angry. I'm not a piece that's asking for you to recognize something that you already admit to, just in different words.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, I'll tell you what, Deshaun, it has been a delight to have you on the show. I am officially Xeroxing and mailing a copy of your think piece to every black barbershop in Louisville. So if you get a bunch of tweets, you can thank me for that. No, but I tell you what, I really do appreciate that you provided some really provocative room for thought. And, you know, I just appreciate that I ain't the only person who felt the barbershop was hella traumatic, but then also hella homoerotic. So every once in a while, I will creep in, because, you know, I will creep into the barbershop for a quick lineup when I get my dress freshly retwisted, and I really enjoy finally being a cute little young barber to go to. So, but Deshaun, thank you so much. By the way, people can check out your website, The Queer Black Millennial. Is that right?
Correct.
And what's that web address, by the way?
So they can go to queerblackmillennial.com to check out content from various content creators across videography, graphic design, writers. They can also check out my personal website, DeshaunHarrison.com, where you'll have like a cohesive list of my work and then services that I offer and my rates.
All right. Take care. Thank you so much. Be well.
Thank y'all.
Bye.
Well, Doc, so as we mentioned, Black History Month is coming to a close.
It's
the start of Women's History Month, and what better connection between the two than the new biopic that's coming out. Is it Lifetime?
No, it's actually going to be on Netflix.
It is Netflix. Yeah, mm-hmm. Yeah.
So they just released the trailer called Roxanne, Roxanne.
And it's about Roxanne Shante, who was one of the first kind of really popping, do people say popping, like one of the off the hook?
Yeah, basically. Okay,
one of the first off the hook black women rappers back in the day, right?
Yeah, she was from New York City's Queensbridge Projects, and her government name is Lolita Shante Gooden, but she goes on to become this really iconic, famous rapper in hip hop that we all know as Roxanne Shante.
Because she did Roxanne's Revenge, right? Because that was the way she kind of comes into popularity is because there's a group that released the song Roxanne, Roxanne, where they basically, it's a diss record, I guess, about some woman or some chick that won't holler back and won't pay the attention.
Yeah.
And so she does Roxanne's Revenge, where she embodies Roxanne, and then kind of gives a diss, like, this is why we ain't hollering back at you, right? So that's kind of how she comes into existence.
Yeah, exactly. And it's going to be led by Shante Adams, who's like a newcomer.
Okay.
But our friend.
Yes. Who are you
going to
say?
From Moonlight.
Mahershala Ali. Okay. Mahershala Ali, who played Juan.
Yes, he's going to be in it. Nia Long is in it.
I knew that Nia Long was in it, and that had me really excited. But now that Mahershala's in it, I'm really Joe.
Yes, and it's going to be produced by Forrest Whitaker, who also produced Dope and Fruitvale Station.
And we just saw him in Black Panther.
We did. I always forget that Forrest Whitaker, because when Killmonger. I would
prefer not to speak about that any further. I mean,
basically, the biopic, the trailer is out now.
Did you see the trailer? It looks really good. There's a scene where Nia Long is like, Nia Long plays her mother. And I guess Shante stays out too late. And her mom was like, you want to be a whore in them streets so you can't come back in this house.
I know. And they haven't released when it's going to come out yet.
Yeah.
But all y'all can watch the trailer on YouTube or watch the trailer on Netflix if you have Netflix. And it's called Roxanne, Roxanne.
Well, let me ask you this, Doc. If, you know, there's been a lot of biopics lately. So we've had we had New Edition. We had Toni Braxton.
Yes.
We've had Whitney Houston. Then we got Roxanne Shante. Who would you like to see covered with a biopic that people haven't really covered yet? Anybody, black, white, whatever, like, who would you like to see, like, for real, like, let's cover their story.
And, like, learn more about
besides ourselves, of course, but, like, what other, musicians?
musicians. I would like to see one on MC Lyte.
Okay.
You know, I would. Like,
you think they're going to keep it real, or you think they're going to be dishonest?
I mean, I just feel like I like
because allegedly, anyway, allegedly designed it because she recently got married to a dude.
Yes,
but which is something that would have released.
I want to see the engagement gag, the children. Yes,
I want to see the Queen Latifah biopic.
Yes, so.
That's what I want to see.
So that's what I mean.
Okay,
I'd like to see those, but you know, we don't know if they're gonna do it. The Aaliyah biopic was terrible.
Yeah. And Wendy Williams got fever for that too because she produced that, right?
Oh, yeah.
But at first it was going to be, I feel like at first it was going to be Zendaya playing Aaliyah, but then.
Wasn't the Aaliyah one the one when they were like, ooh, Lifetime is going to do Malcolm X, when all those memes started popping up people
were really upset about
it. Yeah, because it was like good and terrible. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Okay, those are good ones. MC Light and Queen Latifah. I don't know who I would want to see. I would like to see Sylvester. You know who Sylvester?
Yes,
okay, yeah,
Sylvester.
I think that would be interesting. Yeah, Sylvester. I think that would be.
I mean, they've had a Sylvester unsung.
Oh, have they? Okay.
They have.
TV One, I haven't gotten that lately.
They've had a Sylvester unsung. Okay. But I would like to see something more lengthy.
Yeah, like really, like what was it like for him, you know, to really, I mean, he was kind of one of a kind at his particular point in time. You know, he was with the Weather Girls and he was so flamboyant, but he also was like a mainstream star. You really don't know much about whether that was easy or tough, you know, the closest we have to that is like a Little Richard figure, but
Little Richard recently in his commentary recently,
he's like anti-gay now.
Yeah, so it's like kind of
he's been delivered and all that, you know,
so it's kind of like, you know, bye Little Richard, see you.
Yeah, so, so Doc, you had a wonderful Black History Month.
I did.
We got to do some fun stuff. We did our Moonlight screening. We did Quest.
Yeah,
at the speed, like we've had a fun Black History
and
Month,
and we all dressed up.
Yes,
well, except Missy. Missy didn't dress up.
Yes,
but we all went to see Black Panther.
We did go see Black Panther
and enjoyed it.
Yes,
at Baxter.
What did you wear? You had your little festive.
I had my little sequin top for like the shiny and glitter effect. And I put the top of my locks in like two buns, like you know, I call them alien buns. So
I love alien buns.
I was
buns.
Trying to do like a kind of futuristic hairstyle.
Yeah, this is very futuristic.
You know, out of the ordinary.
Yeah.
You know.
So we have fun. So anyway, listeners, happy Black History Month to y'all. When we regroup, it will be well into Women's History Month. And so we'll be sure to bring you some wonderful stories about wonderful women who are changing the world. But for now, we are out of time. We got to say goodbye. Doc, say goodbye.
Bye.
Bye, everybody.
Strange Fruit is produced by Louisville Public Media. Our producer is Laura Ellis.
For more information, visit strangefruitpod.org, like us on Facebook, or follow us on Twitter at Strange Fruit Pod.
The views expressed on Strange Fruit do not reflect those of LPM, its staff, or its underwriters.
Our executive producers are me, Jason Gardner.
And me, Kyla Story.
Thanks for listening.